The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everyone, this is Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Jake Runyon.
And by our powers combined, we are the Canned Air Podcast. But right now, you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a new installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 195. And as I promised the last time that I was out on the airwaves for my episode with Nick Havert, I promised that I would do a recap of AEW All In, Double or Nothing, and of course, StarCast 2, because I was there, I was out in Vegas, along with my friend Justin, who's going to come on this show and talk about his perspective on things, and Dom Riggio from Mess Bucket Comics was out in Las Vegas as well for the event and for the festivities, and he also is going to give his perspective on the weekend. Of course, all of this went down over Memorial Day weekend, and since it is a little bit of a long episode, I am not going to waste any time. I'm going to tell you right now that I appreciate the fact that this episode is brought to you by World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5992 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they have tons of comics from every era, whether you're talking about gold, silver, bronze, or even the modern era. They also have graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, and various other collectibles. So stop on over to the store and say hi to Jeff and the fine folks over there at World's Greatest Comics. Or you can also check them out online at wgcomics.com or find them on Facebook, facebook.com/wgcomics. And as I said, since it's a long episode, I'm going to throw it to a very quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear all about the experiences that myself, Justin, and Dom had while we were in Vegas for AEW All In, Double or Nothing, and StarCast 2. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Justin, you're joining me here on this episode of the PVD Cast to discuss our trip out west to see AEW All In, Double or Nothing, and of course, StarCast 2. So, all right, well, let's forego talking about the results of the show, because I think by now everybody knows who won, who went over, et cetera, et cetera. So let's just talk about, in general, Double or Nothing. So what's your thoughts on the card?
First, overall. I thought the show was, because you and I both went to All In together. Mm-hmm. I actually thought the show itself, looking back on it, because I've actually seen it again since, is actually a better show overall from start to finish. Better well put together, better well organized, better well booked, better well everything, production, you name it, than All In was. I also don't think it was as memorable. And maybe that's because All In felt so uniquely different. But the show itself was terrific. And it was so... And I don't want to make it sound like it wasn't special, because it clearly was. But it really felt like the kickoff of something that was going to be bigger. Where All In felt like this counterculture thing.
Yeah, no, I got you. I feel the same way. I hate to throw this word out there, but it felt like Double or Nothing was more corporate.
Yeah,
with
absolutely.
Air quotes no. being used that no one can see. Yeah. Just, you know, it seemed a little bit more, and it is, let's not lie. I mean, it is now more corporate than All In was.
Which is actually the reason I'm weirdly more excited about it coming out of this than I was All In. All In was this great show. It was a lot of fun, but it was an indie show. And you didn't know what was next, if there was going to be a next. We now know there's a next.
Right.
And that made it feel different. Like, you're right, a little more corporate, so a little more contained, a little more not as uniquely special. But at the same time, you knew there was the next. And it felt like the kickoff to something. And I got to tell you, if any other promotion could kick off a pay-per-view the way that AEW just kicked off a pay-per-view, a promotion, the way they just did, they would think they did the greatest thing in the history of the world. The show was terrific front to back. When you combine it with the surprises that came, I just, like I said, it still felt unique, but it did feel more corporate. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, when you look on paper at all the matches, I mean, hell, some of those matches could have main evented anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. But I feel like they gave you, as a wrestling fan, a little bit of everything. I think you had the crazy-ass luchador balls-to-the-wall match of the Bucks versus the Lucha Brothers. I felt like you had a really good old-school 1980s-style match with Cody and Dustin. I felt like you had a WCW cruiserweight, you know, late 90s match with Guevara and Sabian. Yeah. I think you had a little bit of everything for everyone. And I feel overall, with the exception of a few small little tweaks, I know that you and I maybe discussed this while we were in Vegas. I felt there were a couple matches that could have been cut down a little bit.
We'll get to the, yeah.
Sure.
Before we get to any of that, let's talk about the one that I think is the most important. And it was the Rhodes battle.
Yes.
Cody versus Dustin. I will say it's the best match I've seen all year. I watched it while you and I were there, and we were both entranced. I mean, mm-hmm. everything that those guys said, did in the ring, we couldn't help but look. I've now watched it since, and I thought it would be less special on TV. It's not. It's incredible. What those guys did was absolutely amazing, and it was so different than what an indie show is. The way to describe it is like if the WWE actually did something right now. It's the best story a WWE could tell.
Yeah.
And they nailed it, and it was terrific. But you're right. They followed it right back up with the indie terrific mm-hmm. Buck show that, you know, everyone's seen, but yet still somehow entertaining. They got it all in. The Sammy Guevara match was fun, was interesting. I think Kip Sabian has a real future at this. Guevara's still a little too thin in my view, but I also understand he's like, 21 or 22. Like,
mm-hmm. When you mean thin, you mean just physique-wise?
Yeah, physique-wise. Okay. Like, okay. It works great when he's against a Kip Sabian, who's a little smaller but still has a build. Mm-hmm. You put him in the ring, if you put Sammy Guevara in the ring with a guy who's not massive, but a guy like Cody Rhodes, mm-hmm. who's legitimately weighing, I think he said, like 205 right now.
Right.
Like, you put him in the ring with a Cody Rhodes, and he looks tiny. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly that I felt that the best match was Cody and Dustin. They did so well at building it up. And, you know, I say that, and I didn't watch Being the Elite, so I didn't watch all the build. All I saw was when we got in there, they were showing all those video packages. That sold me on that rivalry, on that match, just that alone. But they did a fantastic job, and I agree. It's one of the best matches I've seen all year. Yeah. I'll go out on a limb and say that as well.
Yeah, I thought it was absolutely incredible. Surprisingly, the match that I thought, when we were there, we thought was good, not great, that I saw on TV, really blew me away better on TV, and was the perfect show to open the real card, if you will, uh-huh. was SCU versus the OWE guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think when we were there, it was I was entertained.
You know, it was fun. It was great. But it didn't feel the Guevara match had just happened in the pre-show mm-hmm. and had all the flippy stuff you could have sure. absolutely imagined. The Battle Royal, which was clunky as hell, and I'm sure we'll talk about.
Yes.
But it told a story, and it told the story it needed to tell.
Right. Yeah.
Coming into the SCU match, I wasn't sure on... when we were there, because it felt like it wasn't a natural progression. When you watch it on TV, it was the perfect way to open the show. It gave the fans something they were familiar with. If you were a first-time watcher of the AEW product, even though that was the first production, you got an interview. You got a promo mm-hmm. like you would come into a Monday Night Raw or a SmackDown. You got these guys. The difference was it was short. It was compact. It didn't drone on. You got the SCU shtick. Everything worked terrifically. And then it transitioned to a match. Not the first time I'll rip on our seats, but our seats weren't great. And when you get closer to the action, you realize how much those guys were doing.
Can I also ask, did it help that there was a commentary team now narrating that six-man match, too.
Not necessarily, and I'll be frank. I thought the commentary was average at best.
Really?
Slightly below average. I hope that he rounds back into it, but it's clear that Jim Ross has lost a little off his fastball.
Really?
Which, you know, is probably a hot take, but...
Okay.
The other Excalibur, I've heard him before. He was exactly what I expected. He's a good color commentary guy. The third guy, who's more of a sports guy, is my understanding.
Yeah, I don't even remember his name. Aaron something. I don't... Okay.
He was lost throughout parts of the show in general, including... at least a few instances where he just called wrestlers the wrong name.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, again, you or I would catch that more frequently. We're obviously the more hardcore fan base. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if he says the wrong SCU guy, you and I will notice where the guy just tuning in to see.
Right. Right. They're not going to matter if it's Daniels and
Kazarian. It's just
Kazarian. Gotcha.
That was a little odd to me. And, you know, maybe he'll grow into that. And to be honest, Ross, like I said, Ross was a little off his game until Moxley came out.
And then he put that over like $1 million, didn't he?
$1 million, which makes perfect sense to me because if you've read the reports, he's stated multiple times he did not know John Moxley was there. And so it was one of the few instances where you're probably getting Jim Ross at Jim Ross, like the surprise, the...
Mm-hmm. And we heard that actually on Sunday when we went to the Remembering Brian Pillman panel where Brian Pillman Jr. had stated that no one was clued in to the fact that Mox was going to be there.
Yeah.
And so it was a surprise for many, many people. You know, and ultimately I think when it comes down to the surprises, for me I wasn't too surprised Moxley showed up. I was more surprised at Awesome Kong showing up, to be honest with you.
I agree. Awesome Kong was a bigger surprise. Like, you're right. You and I had talked ad nauseum. Like, he's going to be here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome Kong was a fun surprise. I'm not real sure. Like, I know she signed an AEW contract. I'm not real sure where she's going, though. She's here for a year or two and then is probably going to go away if she's here that long. I'm not real sure that she's the attraction. We'll see if she can still go. I know I sound critical. I'm not. I actually thought she did a terrific job during their match. The reason I thought Moxley... So it was definitely the bigger surprise.
Sure, right.
His is clearly more impactful for a million different reasons. But I thought the way they handled his surprise was even better done.
Mm-hmm.
We all expected him to be there. The way he came in was NWO-esque. He came in a way that we were familiar, except it was, again, to knock the WWE, because apparently I'm going to do that a lot tonight.
He isn't knocking the WWE right now? So.
Right? He came in like the Shield, like what we've seen him do 1,000 times, except it wasn't announced. You heard the buzz through the crowd. I distinctly remember sitting next to you going, what's going on over there?
Yeah,
and you looked over. And there was just the attention spanned down and the electric feel of the crowd. It felt organic. When he came into the ring, he didn't just go after Jericho. Jericho and him have a great conversation. What the hell are you doing here? They're all playing this off like it's him. And he'll immediately gets rid of Jericho, who's the guy you think he's going to go after. He's the winner. He's this. He takes out the ref. And then he turns to the guy we weren't expecting him to go after. You see him go after Kenny Omega, and all of a sudden you realize, oh my God, they're already going a place that we haven't thought about going before. And it was so unique. It was so different because it, like I said, it was that NWO-esque natural feel like, oh God, he's going to do this. The bump off the poker chips was terrific. Though you and I both joked, if no one goes, no one takes a bump through those or off those poker chips, we're going to be furious. I just thought they nailed everything about it. I thought it was terrific. I'm still not convinced he's a great wrestler. I am convinced he's a great storyteller. And Cody Rhodes just proved to me, as we were just talking about earlier, you don't have to be the world's greatest wrestler, but if you tell me a good story, I'm going to be enthralled.
Right, exactly, exactly. I totally agree. Yeah, I mean, overall, the fact that you are sitting here and you stated that rewatching the event, and it was still as good as it was when we were there live. To me, that tells you that it's, you know, it's a world-class, five-star, whatever adjective you want to use, event, and there you go. I think that for me, as I mentioned real quick, the Battle Royal was a little clunky with the rules, but it was designed to get Hangman Page over, and it did. I felt that there were two matches that should have been trimmed down. I felt Angelico and Jack Evans versus Best Friends was a little too long, because you were going to get a heavy dose of that anyways later on in the show. You should have cut that down a little bit. And I felt that the women's six-man, or six-woman, excuse me, tag match was also something that went way too long. Granted that there was some fantastic action.
Yeah.
But I felt like it went too long with the silliness that happened with the foreign objects and and all that jazz. They could have trimmed that down quite a bit. And it, I think it still would have been entertaining and still would have done what it needed to do.
I thought the Joshi match, I thought was, I actually agree with you. I actually didn't agree with you at the show. I thought it was fun. It was entertaining. We saw all the crazy stuff. There was the, I don't know the woman's name, and I would butcher it if I did, but you and I joked that she was Aladdin on cocaine.
Oh, yeah. The one with the giant, like, parachute.
She was definitely dressed like Jasmine. I mean, she was definitely the star of the match.
Right.
Clearly, and that's included with Ajit Kong. I thought they did a terrific job of protecting Ajit Kong. The mystique was still there, even though she's getting older, and the ability to go isn't there. They made a star in whatever that woman's name is in that match, which was something I don't know if they planned on doing. But I thought whatever she was doing in that match, I was watching. When she was down on the ground on the mats, I needed to know where she was. I thought she was the most compelling character in that. You're right. It went a little too long.
Okay.
On the rewatch.
Yeah.
When the dueling weapons came out and all those kind of things, you were looking at this like, you know, you could have hit the finish now.
Right.
And you could have saved us all 3.5 minutes and we'd have been
good. Yeah, exactly.
You still would have made a star.
Right.
You still would have protected the woman you wanted to protect. The redheaded woman on the other team also ended up looking way better on TV than I remember her looking in person. She took a lot of bumps that I don't want to say that we didn't see, but you forgot that our little cocaine Jasmine was doing all of these things to somebody, and it was typically that woman. You're right. The Best Friends match was, I don't want to say forgettable. It was fun. It was fine. It didn't need to be there. And I don't want to knock any of those four guys. They did everything they were supposed to do. Evans amazes me. He can still go like that.
Because that's a dude that has wrestled for like 15 years.
Yeah.
That style, I mean, I can remember seeing him way back in Ring of Honor doing all kinds of crazy stuff. So, yeah, definitely that dude. It's good that he could still go.
But I didn't. You could have thrown as much as because I know you don't watch BT, as much as BT tried to show that the Best Friends didn't need to be in the Battle Royal, those guys could have all been in the Battle Royal and gotten their spots in and gone home.
Exactly. Well, who impressed you most at Double or Nothing that you hadn't seen before? Because I'm throwing that out there because for me, like I've already been impressed with MJF. So he is out of the equation. Somebody new maybe that you
heard about. I will say this and then I will move on from him. You and I had never seen MJF before All In.
Right. Prior to.
Yeah, before All In, neither of us had seen MJF. We thought he put on both of us, I think, thought he put on the best full match with Matt Cross. In fairness, it's real easy to put on a great match with Matt Cross.
Yes, he's a pro. He's a pro, hands down.
He was the MVP of the show, in my view. From his work in the Battle Royal to, they gave a kid, and I don't know how old MJF is.
He is 21, I believe.
They gave a kid a hot mic in front of 12,000 people and 100,000 people on pay-per-view. And that kid sounds like what you wish The Miz sound like.
Yes, yes.
I mean, he is the perfect heel in today's world. Now, who impressed me that I hadn't seen before? Oh, that's hard for someone like you or I who've seen most of these people before because we're junkies.
I'll throw mine out there.
Okay.
Angelico. I heard the buzz about him, everything. I've never seen a match with him ever. I'm familiar with where he's worked and how, you know, the mystique of him. Even though I stated that that match should have been cut down, I still was impressed with what he did.
Okay.
So I'll throw that. That would be my pick.
What he, yeah, like you said, it sounds awful because it sounds like we're trashing that match, and we are to an extent because it was the most unnecessary match there. If you and I had gone to Louisville, Kentucky, and that had been the main event, that's what we'd be talking about.
Sure, right.
Now.
Yeah, right, exactly.
We'd be like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
And, right.
Oh my God, why aren't these guys main eventing WrestleMania?
Right, and, exactly.
The Battle Royal I thought was a lot of fun. I think the thing that Luchasaurus, who I've seen before, but only sparingly, I saw him at an ROH show here, actually, I think with you,
yeah,
where he was doing job work. He came off really strong, and not just because he made the Final Four. My concern with him is at 6'4", 6'5", in that Battle Royal, he looked like a monster, mm-hmm. a giant. If they continue to grow as a company, 6'5", like if you call it the Randy Orton test. If you put that guy next to Randy Orton, he's not going to look so big anymore. So I'm a little concerned about that. But everyone else I'd seen pretty much. I had not seen Jungle Boy live. I thought he is young. He's talented. And again, this is maybe the WWE bias and growing up that way. I just look at that guy and I'm 5'8". And if he's 5'8", I'll eat my hat. Like, I don't know how he's going to be there. The guy that surprised me the most.
Okay.
And then we'll move into StarCast. This is a good transition into StarCast.
All right. I know who it is. Go ahead.
Marco Stunt is my favorite surprise of the weekend. That man can sing. Like, we went to Bill Apter's karaoke night, and it was an okay evening. And then Marco Stunt came on the mic. He started singing, and the room stopped whatever it was doing. Not because it was Marco Stunt, but because we couldn't believe that voice was coming from Marco Stunt.
And I missed it. He was done by the time I got to the hotel, yeah. And everything, because that was Friday night when I flew in, and he was already done. I didn't get to hear it. I'm a little bit disappointed.
It was amazing how good that guy was, and you're just like, that can't be real. Like, where's that voice coming from? It was terrific. It was a lot of fun, but... So that would be my surprise. Okay. But I've seen him wrestle before. He's terrific. He's a lot of fun in the ring. But you're only getting a good 8 to 10 minutes out of him in a real match.
Yeah. Right, at this point.
At this point. Right. I mean, that's fair. Right.
Okay, so since we're talking about StarCast, do you have any other highlights that you would like to mention from the convention?
Things I really enjoyed.
Okay.
I really enjoyed, we went to the Pillman show. I thought that was absolutely terrific.
Yeah.
My favorite moment of it, I have two favorite moments, of not the Pillman show, but overall. The Pillman show was great because it was a small group of people. It felt genuine. I do think they could have done with two less people on the dais. It was just, they were trying to get too many people to talk about one thing at a time. And that's generally the knock on some of those larger dais events. And more importantly, the one I thought was disappointing is they didn't get to hear from Brian Pillman Jr. as much as I thought we all would have liked to hear about mm-hmm. some of his memories of mm-hmm. or his viewings of his dad's matches. But my two favorite memories of StarCast, period, and then we'll talk about that actually occurred at StarCast at an event, would have been the Something to Wrestle With podcast. It was nice to see those guys just be genuine, be themselves, and to be completely honest. My favorite moment of that, of course, being, and I think I told you this, is where Conrad Thompson admitted to the crowd that for Friday night, just for the green room, the Diet Coke bill alone was $13,000 Caesar Palace. And so he was just joking about it. And it was so clear that he was being genuine about it because he was so upset about it and that he was just wasting money on Diet Coke like this. And it came off as real. And that's really why you go to an event like this, is you're looking for those real moments.
Right.
And you got it. My other favorite moment, and then we'll talk about what our least favorite moments were, is my wife, who's not a heavy drinker. We bought an all you can drink pass at for the after party of StarCast. My wife has a weird fascination crush with Brian Pillman Jr. And they struck up a conversation real briefly, and
he's just like, I want Corona. And then so every time we went to the bar thereafter, which was fleeting because of something we're going to complain about here in a minute, she, who had an all-you-could-drink pass, would just buy Coronas just for Brian and would find him and give him a Corona.
You know what? I think that that is one of the negatives since we're on that, you know, on that track. Okay, so for folks that don't know, there was an after party after Double or Nothing, and it was at Caesar's Palace. And so we purchased tickets, and we purchased VIP tickets because I think in February or whenever we got the tickets, you said, let's go big, and I was all about it. However, when I got out there, you had suggested, you know, drinks are expensive. Maybe you want to get the all-drink pass, which was not cheap. It was not cheap, folks.
No.
And so I did. And the mere fact that they – and I know listeners at home are probably going to think we're exaggerating, but we're not. The room itself probably had 400, 500 people in it.
I would say maybe as much as 600 people.
Okay. But somewhere in between there, 400, 500, 600, one bartender and one bar. That was it.
Well, to be fair to them, they had three bars, two cash bars, and then one bar for the all-you-could-drink people, which was in the VIP area, despite the fact that not everyone with a bracelet for all-you-could-drink had also paid for the VIP area. The problem with this, of course, then, is we were initially told you could not go to a cash bar if you were getting the all-you-can-drink. So they had a bartender at a bar serving probably half of the crowd that was had bought the all you could drinks.
Yeah.
So it was a 40-minute wait to get a drink. So literally you were getting you got your drink. The first time we went through, you got a drink. Yeah. The next couple times we started demanding two at a time. But literally the first time you got your drink, you got back in line. And that would have been the whole evening if it hadn't been for the two drinks at a time thing.
Yeah, and I was just a little bit disappointed by that, and there were lots of people that were disappointed by that. Let's not sugarcoat it. I also felt like the separation of StarCast, because I don't recall it being advertised like this when we first got our tickets, that part of the festivities for StarCast was at the Tuscany Casino and Resorts, but then others were at Caesar's Palace, which was a legitimate 15-minute walk from one part to the other, or you took an Uber, which an Uber costs money, people, and, you know, I'm a cheapskate sometimes. I didn't want to pay every single time I was going up and down the strip there. Sorry, Flamingo, it's not on the strip. And, yeah, so that those were the two negatives for me, and a lot of people shared those negatives with me. So, you know, I know you probably agree that that was not handled the best way, those two things.
I agree, like, because when we went to All In, we got the StarCast pass, and we stayed at a hotel nearby. And one of our biggest regrets was that we wanted to stay at the casino where things were happening.
Right.
Which is why when the Tuscany was announced, we booked immediately.
Exactly.
Because we wanted to have a good time at the place. Because we felt like every time we left, we heard something from someone that said, hey, you just missed X, or you just missed Y. And we're like, we're not doing that. We're going to enjoy the experience. Then to find out, after we'd booked the hotel, paid for it, done everything, by the way, all the big stuff is happening 15 minutes away from you. If we'd have known that, we probably just would have booked it Caesar's and been done with it. So I didn't like that part. I know you were also negative on it. I will tell you, it was annoying. It was a pain in the butt. I also think that you and I have the hindsight, the disadvantage of going to both events. And I will tell you, because if this had happened in reverse, had we gone to StarCast 2 and had to walk 15 minutes each way, I think we would have been like, this is the greatest event I've ever been to.
Yeah, good
this
point.
Is a lot Very of
good.
Fun.
Yeah.
This is good terrific. Point. StarCast 1 was so special because it was such a it still is. And if you get the opportunity, go. It is such a small venue. That higher, whatever it is not a big place. You literally are falling over other people just to stay out of people's way, that it felt close. It felt unique. It felt special. So to then go to that, to a much larger place that is Caesar's, even the Tuscany was bigger than
True. Yeah.
than the Hyatt.
Yeah.
And I mean, that high was not big.
No, and I laugh only because when I got there, I was like, hey, I'll see you in 5 minutes. I'll just take my bags to the room. You're like, no, you won't. 20 minutes, and yeah. I'll be damned, man. I walked and walked, and like, I'm looking for Building M. I'm like, where the hell is Building M at, man? Yeah. But no, it was big. And I think that is a valid point. I think that that is the problem that you and I have, and probably many other people, too, who went to both events, is that StarCast 1 was so compact, and it was all right there, minus going to the Sears Center.
Yeah.
That then going to StarCast 2 and having it this way. And you know, maybe too, we talked about it. It is a corporation.
Yeah.
And maybe when you get involved with a corporation, sometimes you have people that have great ideas, but you know what I mean? But or maybe not, I don't want to say not intelligent, but maybe aren't wise to how convention should run.
I think that's fair.
You know,
I think, you know, I understand they wanted everything to look nice, everything to be mm-hmm. super nice, which is probably one of the reasons they picked Caesars. They'd have been better off picking a place like the Link or one of the, I don't want to say smaller casinos, because, I mean, as you noted, even the Tuscany is massive. I mean, what a small Vegas hotel is nothing. I mean,
it's just nothing like
what the rest of the country sees.
Yeah.
But to pick what I would call one of the middle-of-the-road casinos.
Yeah.
Because I understand why they wanted the place like the Tuscany. It was affordable. Most wrestling fans, you know, they were probably spending a lot of disposable money to get out there and to do this kind of thing. So I understand their desire to have those, you know, to have an inexpensive option. But you could have gone to there. You could have gone to, what's the casino we walked by a million times where the Wahlburgers...
Was that a Bally's?
Bally's.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, by the way, all owned by Caesars. Like, they have a convention area. You could have done all of this at Bally's, which is relatively inexpensive. Mm-hmm. You could have gone to Link. You could have gone to Harrah's. All of these places have those. And you could have fit everything under one roof and still been a relatively affordable option. That's the only thing, major complaint I have about it. Or, and, you know, if they're going to make Double or Nothing one of their staple events, don't do the convention in Las Vegas.
Yeah, just do the show and that's
just
it.
Do the show.
Yeah,
if you want to keep it small and special, the StarCast event, keep it out in Schaumburg. Yeah, keep it out in Schaumburg. Keep it special,
suburban Chicago.
Yeah, suburban Chicago. That. Like, keep it small, keep it simple. The thing that actually surprised me there was how few people actually go to it feels to me like everyone that goes to StarCast goes to the show.
Event, yeah.
However, probably only a third of the people that go to the event mm-hmm. go to StarCast. Mm-hmm. So I think you can still get away with doing this in Schaumburg because mm-hmm. you're only getting 3,000 to maybe 6,000 mm-hmm. of the 10 to 12 that are there. And even if you're getting 6,000, they're not all coming the same day.
True. Well, let's close up our conversation by discussing what's next for AEW. They have the TNT slot. It's rumored to be Wednesday nights.
Yes.
Obviously, with Double or Nothing, we've seen what they can do production-wise. What do you think is next for this brand new company?
What is next for them is really the interesting part. My understanding, and this is all rumor, is that they're going to go to 2 hours. It's going to be a two-hour show. I kind of wish they would slow down a little more. I know I joked about this with you earlier. I kind of wish that they would start like any other small company and start small and build. My personal view for them is they should only run one show a month, maybe as a pay-per-view, maybe as a Clash of the Champions on TNT, those kind of things. And the rest should be building out storylines through letting these guys go wrestle at the independents. Make it an extended out being the Elite. I think that's the way they should go. That's not the way they're going to go. They're going to go to what we would call the WCW-WWE model. It's pretty clear at this point that's their plan. I still hope that they plan on working with some independents. The fact of the matter is that's how they've built themselves up. Mm-hmm. It's how they've built a fan base. Especially today as we're recording this, Jon Moxley just won the New Japan
IWGP US title. Right? Yeah.
I would love to see that make an appearance in AEW. I think those kind of things would make it unique, feel special and different.
I'm going to interject for a minute. You mentioned that. So New Japan worked closely with Ring of Honor. I mean, I suppose now, does that mean there's crossover between those two companies and AEW? Because personally, I feel at this particular junction in time that AEW is not going to put a dent in the WWE.
Agree. Not for the foreseeable future.
Not for the foreseeable future. I do believe AEW definitely will, to some degree, injure Impact, MLW, Ring of Honor. But I think that now, and especially let's talk about the bigger two there, Ring of Honor and Impact. You got to be sweating if you're some of those CEOs in charge of those companies.
The reason I think they're safe, and I don't mean safe from the standpoint of I don't think they're in danger of going under, is because of their corporate backing. Anthem is not going to just throw away Impact. It's an asset. They're going to survive. Sinclair,
yeah.
The same thing. Those both own those entities to fill content. Do I think they're going to take a hit roster-wise, talent-wise? Yeah, actually, star-wise, I do. Mm-hmm. You know, a matter of fact, the rumor was Brian Cage was willing to go out on AEW, the Double or Nothing show for the Battle Royal. And the rumor is the Impact lawyers had to call him and goes, your contract says you can't do that. You know, wrestlers, especially those guys at the higher ups in those places, are going to be more attracted to an AEW because of the TV deal. Because let's be honest, the Impact TV deal is a joke.
Yep.
The Sinclair one is only better in marginal ways, but that's just because Sinclair's at least invested in a right. network of its own.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And by that I mean the ROH Honor Club, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. I honestly think production, talent-wise, skill-wise, fan interest-wise, this is the death of the current version of ROH. If you and I were at an ROH show a couple months ago, the crowds are down. You forget how much. I mean, let's be honest. ROH in New Japan sold out. The ticket sales for other events have proven otherwise. They sold out MGM on the promise of bringing the Elite. When that show sold out because they were advertising those guys. Those guys were on the poster, and then they went away after the sale had happened. These companies, as much as I like New Japan, it's my favorite promotion. They're not there in the U.S. Ring of Honor, other than Marty Scurll, who's a superstar in that promotion?
Well, I mean, they have superstars, but when you look at Jay Lethal, Dalton Castle, the Briscoes, they've done it all.
Oh, yeah.
There is nothing more for them to do. And that's the problem, that there's no one coming up. There's a lot of talented people. Right now, as it stands, there are a lot of people that are in that mid-card.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And they're fantastic talent.
Oh, yeah. Bandito, I'm not knocking any. Yeah.
Bandito, Flip Gordon. I'm sorry. Matt Taven is not upper echelon world title.
I agree. Tender.
Those guys are all fantastic. I call them Mr. Perfects because there's nothing wrong with that. You need those guys. But they haven't built anybody, and I think that ultimately is going to lead to some problems.
Yeah,
with AEW coming around,
I think so too. But getting back to what the question was, where does AEW go from here? They clearly have an upper card. I think the smart way for them to go is you can't do off seasons, especially if you're doing a weekly TV show. Mm-hmm. I think the way for them to go is to still book smaller venues. Go the Ring of Honor route. Mm-hmm. Look, if you start trying to fill 10,000 seats every week, you know, everyone's so excited. AEW Double or Nothing sold out 12,000 seats. Mm-hmm. All In sold out 10,000 seats. Those include people like you and I who flew to Chicago and to Las Vegas to go see those shows because they were special events. If you expect to sell out, you know, the 10,000 seat arena every Wednesday night, mm-mm. I've got bad news for you. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. They'd be better off to pick these 2,000 to 3,000 seat arenas, mm-hmm. pack people in them, mm-hmm. make it feel like a small, intimate, the coolest indie rock band you can go to. Make it feel special. Make it feel unique. And like I said, you can't do an off season, but I would go slow, which this is going to sound really weird talking about the Young Bucks. They actually do a good job of. The Young Bucks in the ring go a mile a minute. If you look at the storylines they tell, especially on things like Being the Elite, things like that, they're unafraid to drag a storyline out for months.
you need to keep the roster small for financial reasons. You need to keep the roster inexpensive. It's actually one of the reasons I think they're so interested in the Chinese talent is how inexpensive it is and the agreement that works there. You need to do these things, and you need to do so in a manner that makes me still feel that every episode you put on of the 52 weeks a year is important. The way to go about doing that is to move slow. They seem to get that part of it right. They've already announced they really only want one they only want one singles title right now. They haven't even discussed the concept of a tag team titles. They're using the AAA tag titles as the tag team belts right now. That's kind of why I would like to see the U.S. championship from New Japan come in to fill those spots. I don't think we should see but one, maybe, I don't think we should see but one world title defense, whoever that world title champ is, a month, if we see that often. Think about how special, in picking on New Japan again, you know, it matters how many title defenses the champions had there. When defends the title, it means the card means something.
Yep. And it used to be that way back in the 80s.
Exactly. Yeah, right. You and I grew up watching Saturday Main Event, watching Hulk Hogan wrestle tag matches that we didn't care about because it was an excuse to see Hulk Hogan. And even that tag match only happened once every 3 months.
Right.
And otherwise, it was promos. Mm-hmm. Slow things down. Keep the roster small. Move forward that way.
And you know what? That feeds into my thought. My thought is AEW needs to do its own thing.
Yep.
And much like many other companies, and I'm not going to rag on them, but much like many other companies want to be WWE light, no, do your own thing.
Yep.
And if that is, whatever that is, whether it's bringing new talent, whether it's, you know, maybe having crazy matches like Young Bucks and Lucha Brothers, or whether that is, as you suggested, slowing things down and telling a story and being meticulous, that's what they got to do.
Slow things down. Make it different. Make it special. I do not need to see, and I'm picking on him even though he's not the champ, I don't need to see Roman Reigns defend the title every single week.
Yeah.
And now with his wild card rule
that's a whole other podcast week.
On Monday and Tuesday, and then the pay-per-view on Friday, and oh my God, I've seen this guy fight for the world title 3 times in a week. Why am I supposed to care about the pay-per-view? And you're right, this is not relevant. Yeah, why am I supposed to care about the world title defense on Friday if I've already seen him defend it twice that week? Doesn't make sense.
All right. Well, with that, let's wrap things up, Justin. Do you want to throw out any social medias or anything?
You can reach me social media at DORTCH4W. It's Dortch for Wrestling. It's my last name. Other than that, that's usually the main contact I use for social media.
All right, man. Well, thanks for stopping by, man.
And with that, I will be back right after this quick break.
Before we hear from Dom Riggio from Mess Bucket Comics talking about his experience in Las Vegas at the AEW event, I'd like to remind you once again that today's podcast is brought to you by World's Greatest Comics. It's the one-stop shop for all of your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, and even comic book supplies. So, if you want to check them out online, all you got to do is go to wgcomics.com or find them on Facebook at facebook.com/wgcomics. Or better yet, stop on by the store. They're located at 5992 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And let them know that you heard about them from me, John Orlando, and the PVD cast. All right, folks, I'm joined by Dom Riggio from Mess Bucket Comics. Dom, how are you, man?
Excellent. How are you, John?
I'm doing well. It's really funny that we keep running into each other at places that are very, very far away from our home bases.
Right.
You know, Detroit, Chicago, Columbus, not that far away from one another geographically, but just ago, 2 weeks ago, you and I ran into each other literally like, what, 1,500, 2,000 miles away from home base in Vegas for for All In, Double or Nothing. So, you were in Collector's Corner at StarCast for the weekend of AEW Double or Nothing. So how was StarCast for you?
Oh man, I had a blast. I was sharing a table with the artist for the Roddy Piper book, Eric Hodson, and you know, we didn't know what to expect. We literally walked in there like, I don't know how this is gonna go. because as far as I'm concerned, the All In, the aspect of StarCast 1 was fantastic. It was just wow. Everybody there was excited to be there, and that usually leads to very good sales. We're like, all right, how is StarCast 2 going to go? And I mean, just phenomenal. I was only there for 2 to 3 days at StarCast, and sales were great. I met a ton of people. People that wanted to work with Mess Bucket Comics and myself. I mean, my table neighbor was Magnum PA, and the next day was SCU. So it's it was pretty incredible.
All right. So since you mentioned that you got to meet several folks there at StarCast, do you want to name drop any other folks that maybe you ran into that you were expecting to see? Like yours truly, I got to talk to Ricky Steamboat, and for me that was a highlight of the weekend. How about you?
Oh my God! I have to. Yeah, definitely. I met Tully Blanchard, Magnum TA, Barry Windham, JJ Dillon. They were all right there. A quick handshake with Bret Hart. Then smaller names like Brian Cage, Killer Cross. God, who else did I run into? Cody in the Bucks, as I said, SCU, Papa Buck. I saw Masa, fat ass Masa, like 100 times. God, I know I'm leaving out a lot of people. Oh, God. Oh, Sonny Ono and Ernest Miller came to the table. I had a quick beer with Eric Bischoff at the end of the night when he told me he can't see straight and had to go to bed. That was probably a highlight. That was pretty funny. So that's just the name of a few. I know I'm leaving a lot out here, but it was just a hell of a weekend.
Did you get a chance to check out any of the panels or the Q&As while you were there, or was it all business for you?
Yeah, unfortunately, I can't really leave the table for too long. I did not see any panels or anything.
Okay, but you did. I visited the panel for the Aftermags, which was very interesting.
Okay.
Because that's a piece of my childhood. So to sit there and hear Bill Apter and Stu Sachs talk about, you know, how they put that magazine together and some of the controversies behind it and whatnot was really interesting.
Isn't he the nicest guy?
He is, because actually Friday night when I got in, he was at the karaoke event that I attended, and I talked to him for about 5, 6, 7 minutes about the Aftermags. And actually, something that many people don't know about, are you familiar with Pro Wrestling This Week?
No. What's that? No.
It was a television show with Gordon Solie and Joe Pedicino, and Apter was on it periodically as a fill-in, but also he had like the Pro Wrestling Illustrated like rankings. It only lasted like 3 seasons. It's on YouTube. If you go to YouTube and just type in Pro Wrestling This Week, basically it was like I want to say like an ESPN for pro wrestling. Like they would show you clips from different territories about what was going on. And yeah, it's really cool. You should definitely check it out on YouTube, Pro Wrestling This Week. The other panels I went to, the Brian Pillman, Remembering Brian Pillman panel, which that was pretty interesting. And I'm trying to think of the other, I'm missing one. I forget which other one I'm missing. Oh, I got to see the Laps Fan podcast do their live thing, and Cultaholic as well do their podcast. So there you go. So
what was the last one?
Cultaholic.
Cultaholic. Oh, Colt Cabana?
No, the guys from England. They're the guys that split off from What Culture Wrestling some time ago and created their own like YouTube channel, Cultaholic. I was just curious to see it. I think that most of the people in there were big fans, so for me, some of the inside jokes went over my head. But you did get a chance to go to Double or Nothing, correct?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, due to the scheduling of being in the in StarCast, I missed the Battle Royal, and we finally got to our seats halfway through the first match after the Battle Royal,
which I believe was Guevara versus Sabian, I think.
Yep. So we saw the second half of that. So that's where my experience started.
Okay. So what'd you think of Double or Nothing?
I thought it was great. I really did. There were some excellent moments there. I don't really have too much to say disparagingly about it. I'm not like Jim Cornette. I don't know if you heard his review of it.
I have yet to, but I've read about it.
It's unbelievable. He's just so, like, for example, like Cornette says, you know, they got two people there and they're shushing each other. It doesn't make any sense. The crowd pops and it's like, you're not watching the product. If you just go into it blind, it's like if you watch, you know, Iron Man 2 without watching Iron Man 1, you might not catch everything because you haven't seen it all. Like, he doesn't watch Being the Elite, obviously. You know? I don't know. But I thought they gave great fan service. The match quality was phenomenal. What I give two thumbs up to is, for example, the women's match with the Japanese wrestlers.
Yes.
I couldn't name one person in that match, but I was still entertained.
Yeah. I think my only complaint, I think a couple of the matches could have been trimmed down just a little bit, and that six man was one of them. I think they could have trimmed that down a little bit. But yeah, I mean, overall, I was impressed that they gave you a little bit of everything.
Right. And the production quality was top notch. It felt like a WWE event or New Japan for sure. It's right there as far as presentation, in my opinion.
I agree.
That entrance, everything looked great. I kind of like that little old school with the heels and faces coming out of different entrances.
Yes.
That was kind of cool.
That is, because that's something we haven't seen in a very long time. You know, going back to the match quality, like I said, I think they gave you a little bit of everything. I think that they gave you some old school feel with Cody and Dustin, and you gave you kind of I always felt that Jericho and Omega kind of had that 90s WCW feel to it, like one of their main events. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought that match was fantastic as well. And then they gave you some of the new stuff too, with the Bucks and Lucha Brothers and, you know, various other matches too.
Absolutely. I one thing that I'm curious about, I haven't watched the replay yet, because I'm curious about the announcing with JR and I can't remember the other guy's name, seeing how that went. So I haven't seen them. I heard JR was great. Like, it was just like, you know, like Attitude Era JR. He was on top of it and he was excellent.
And you know what? That's something I was concerned about too, because how do I want to say this without being offensive? You know, Jim Ross is getting up there. You know, does he still have it? You know, and it's a different product. It's a different style. I know he's done some things with New Japan, but does he still have it? And I think that was the big question mark for me. And I, too, have not seen the replay yet.
Right. I mean, and JR, I mean, he had he's getting up there in age. He has the Bell's palsy and his wife passed away. And he said recently, he's like, this has completely re-energized them. Like, that's a hell of a lot to get over right there. Those good things.
Yeah.
So if it re-energizes JR, I think that's even better. But overall, I was very impressed. I mean, I challenge anybody else to do a pay-per-view for the first time, brand new company, brand new city, all that, and see if you can actually do better than that. That was very impressive to me.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, speaking of being re-energized, were you surprised by the emergence of Jon Moxley at the end of the event?
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, I thought he might go to AEW, but I thought they were going to have I thought he was going to come a little bit later. I thought that maybe there was some overlap of his contract and he might not be able to, like a 90-day or 30-day no-compete or something like that. So when he showed up, he walked right by us, and I was like, oh my God, that's phenomenal. And then just the Jon Moxley character was so much fun. I mean, the promo he cut after that, after All In was over, I mean, that's better than anything I've seen him do in WWE on the mic, maybe in years. I don't know if he did anything better than that. You know, and you've heard all I'm sure you've read all the interviews with him afterwards saying how he was handcuffed creatively. It kind of all makes sense. He just had a new gleam in his eye that he hadn't seen in a while. Seeing, to answer your question.
Yeah, you know what? And I was somewhat surprised that I, much like you, I expected him to show up, but not at that event. I guess maybe I was curious to see if there was going to be any truth to the rumors of CM Punk showing up.
Right.
So I guess part of me was more curious about that, and somewhat, actually, to be bluntly honest, somewhat glad he didn't, because I think that he would have overshadowed what those guys had done. I don't know if you agree with me or disagree with me on that or not.
This is their first one, and then it would have been more about Punk. It's like saying, announcing your engagement at your buddy's wedding. Like, you never want to do that.
What a great analogy.
I really thought it All In would have been the absolute perfect time for CM Punk, even if he just came out and waved to the crowd.
Yeah.
That's it. But so I think if he doesn't show up at All Out, he's probably done.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at All In, he had that lawsuit going on. He had a ton of things going on in his life. You know, he had a fight coming up, all that stuff. But now at All Out, it's in Chicago again. If he shows, I think if he doesn't show up at that one, it's probably done.
Yeah, sure. What did you think was the best match at Double or Nothing?
I gotta say, it's Cody and Dustin. That was more emotionally involved with that one, and then a close second would be Kenny Jericho.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I felt that Cody and Dustin just had that old school feel to it. I was invested in it. I wanted to see it. And I got to be honest, I think the smartest thing they did was the promo afterwards to set up for their next show.
Right.
Cody and Dustin against the Bucks. Like, I want to see that.
Right. I want to see it more now than I would if they didn't have that match.
Right, exactly. And I want to see, you know, because I don't know. I mean, I know that they teamed as Goldust and Stardust, but I don't think that they've ever teamed as Dustin and Cody. So that also, you know, gives me that, like, urge to check out that next show.
Right. And, oh, my God, that blade job. Oh. He was, when they showed a close-up of his face, it looked like somebody turned on a garden hose.
Yes. I was like, yes.
I'm not very squeamish, and I was like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a horror, almost like a slapstick horror movie. Like, that looks just like, if that was in a movie, I'd be like, that never happens.
You know, and while that might have been the grossest moment, and I know you didn't watch the Battle Royal, but I feel like Joey Janela's table bump was the most horrendous thing I saw all night long.
Oh, yeah, I saw the replay. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Man, he's going to kill himself.
if you keep taking bumps like that, most definitely.
Man, oh, man. But yeah, that. Did you like the Bucks match?
I thought the Bucks match and the Lucha Brothers match was okay. I give credit to those four, because you have to be one hell of an athlete to do what they do. However, not to be Cornette-like, it's not my cup of tea. I like a little more psychology to my matches. It was entertaining, sure. Athletic, oh yeah. My favorite, probably no. You know, I'm going with several other matches before I would name that as a favorite. You know, Cody and Dustin, Omega and Jericho. I liked Guevara and Sabian. I thought that was a really good kind of cruiserweight WCW style match. I'm throwing some of that stuff in there. Heck, even the MJF promo to interrupt Bret Hart was even, you know, up on that top list before I would get to the Bucks and Lucha Brothers. But yeah, it was entertaining, but just not my cup of tea. How about you?
MJF might be my favorite moment of the whole thing. Somebody's coming to the ring. Oh, he's unreal. Like, that guy is just, it might be their biggest star that you didn't really know about, you know, other than the Bucks and Cody and Kenny. He might be at the top of the list here. But I'm sorry, what was your question before I went
on? What did you think of the Bucks and Lucha Brothers?
Oh, yeah, I agree. It's it just seemed like a match with like finisher after finisher. All these, you know, all these high spots, and there's nothing really in between.
Right.
You know, right. They didn't lead me to the high spot. It was just like another one, and then there's another one, and there's another one. You know, as a viewer, I would have liked to see a little bit more of that. I've never been in a wrestling ring, so I can't say they don't know what they're doing. They obviously do. But for me, yeah, I like to see a little more storytelling. I know I'm very familiar with their repertoire and what they can do in the ring. They're phenomenal. I just think if they slowed it down just a bit, it'll work a little better.
Yeah. Yeah, and you look, I'll be honest too. I've watched the Young Bucks on various different New Japan shows, and I like their stuff in New Japan because they do slow down a little bit. They do tell more of a story in New Japan than they do seem to here in the United States.
Right. You know, Matt and Nick, especially Matt, but they have great facial expressions. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really good at that. But when a match that's going that fast, there's no time for it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see all those spots just with more substance in between them. Mm-hmm. Not like the all-in main event. I understand they had to hurry because they were up against the clock. So that's totally different. But I felt like this match was exactly the same, and they had all the time they needed.
So what do you think is next for AEW? Because they have the TNT spot. It's coming sometime this fall. What do you think the future holds for this company, just out of your personal opinion and fandom?
This is where I'm confused. And actually, if I could say one thing that I didn't like, it'll lead into your question from Double or Nothing, was the sledgehammer on the throne and that whole thing with Cody.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking the Triple H's throne. Like, I don't think that was necessary at all. Plus, on top of that, because they said they're an alternative. They're not trying to beat WWE or compete or have a war. Then they did that. And I guess that Triple H did say the pissant little company during the Hall of Fame, right?
Right.
So maybe that's like a shot back across the bow because they, you know, whatever. I think anytime, any business, you concentrate on your product and don't worry about somebody else. They're not at a war. Even if when their show comes out, it's going to be on Tuesday or Wednesday, right? It's not even going to go up against Raw or SmackDown.
Right. It's on a Wednesday, I believe, is what they have tentatively stated.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, I am very curious to see what they do. Because now they're talking almost like it is a war. So I'm a little confused. At first it was an alternative. It was giving people another option. The people that don't like WWE, and now it almost sounds like that they're going to go ahead and compete. So I had heard rumors that Tony, the Khan family, does not like the McMahon family. Like, there's real heat there. So I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting. Very interesting. I'd love to see another show on primetime. I'm excited for that. And it's surreal that it's going to be on TNT. Like, I wonder if it's going to have the replay right after, like in the 90s. You know, like, that would be hilarious. I'm really excited. I honestly, at this point, I don't know what direction they're going, and I like it this way.
Okay. See, I feel like, I feel that for them to claim that this is a war, and I agree with you, by the way, with the whole destroying of the Triple H throne. I thought that was not necessary at all. That's like alerting people. You've now given like 2 or 3 minutes of attention to your competition, quote unquote.
Right.
So I feel like that was not a very wise idea.
And it wasn't really that appealing aesthetically. Just like there was smoke that came up, and it's like, okay, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was like that time in Halloween Havoc when Abdullah the Butcher got electrocuted.
Right.
It looked really cheesy and terrible.
Yeah. Even that had more, like, at least there was more going on. This was just like dust went up in the air.
Yeah. I'm thrilled that AEW is going to be on television, on TNT, because I believe you have to have competition for businesses to be successful. No matter if you're a wrestling company, if you're a pizza joint, if you're a burger place, if you're a marijuana dispensary, whatever. You know, you got to have competition in order to, you know, appease the customers. And so I'm happy about that. Do I think they're going to damage the WWE? No.
No.
You know, that are they going to pull some people? I think some people are going to be leaving WWE, and I think that that is going to change how WWE does business, I think. But they're not going to run WWE out of business. I don't think that they're going to be the next WCW and go 83 weeks of beating them in any type of ratings. But it does give us something else to watch.
Right, right. I mean, I completely agree with you there. You only run your fastest when you're being chased, you know? Mm-hmm. So if they have competition, and what I didn't like about the Monday Night War would be like, a guy like Jeff Jarrett went back and forth like 5 times or something. And other guys, they would just sign them because they were available. They didn't really have – they just wanted them so the other one didn't have them. Now, a guy like Jon Moxley, he doesn't fit in WWE. It kind of worked a couple times, maybe with the heel a little bit. But he wasn't happy. You know, when he came to AEW, it seems like a much better fit for his character and who he is. Now, if they get more people like that in the AEW from the WWE roster that fit their system, then I'm okay with it. But so far, I like that they have shown me some great talent that I didn't even know existed. Like MJF. I mean, he's, my God, the best heel I've seen in many years.
So who do you hope to see in AEW? Real quick, I'll just put you on the spot. You know, if there's somebody on the roster in WWE, who do you think you would like to see?
Dolph.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's perfect. I mean, he has to go. He has to. I don't even know. I feel like they're just giving him that push now just so they don't lose him. Kofi. Dolph is perfect. Can you imagine Dolph and Kenny?
Oh, my. That would be an epic, epic, epic feud.
Oh, Dolph and Jericho. Even Dolph and Hangman. Like, there's so much for him to do. And so much he can bring. I mean, they would give him a character and just let him do his thing, which I feel like he might be being held back there. I think if he was to leave the company, he would say the same thing that Jon Moxley has said. Yeah, for sure. What about you?
I would like to see the tandem of Gallows and Anderson go.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Because likewise, I feel like they have not been utilized to the best of their ability.
Right.
You know, I mean, and right now they're, you know, hit and miss on television. And even when they are, they're doing the job of somebody. I would like to see them go.
That's a good call. I agree with that. The Revival.
Sure.
The Revival. Maybe Sasha. To stack up that women's division a little more.
Right, which that seems to be maybe the only area of concern for AEW is it doesn't seem like that women's roster is very deep right now.
Yeah, no, nobody can touch the women's roster at WWE.
Right.
Any roster in wrestling history, as far as I know.
Which I enjoyed the Awesome Kong, by the way. That was one thing I totally forgot about, but that was a great surprise. Yeah. More so than Moxley showing up was Awesome Kong.
Yes, yep, we forgot about that for sure. Yeah, that's She's a hell of an attraction.
Yes, you know, most definitely.
I think they have to build up that women's division. I mean, I can't believe how many women are on the WWE roster, and they all deserve to be there too. You know, I think I agree with that. They should try to get some women. I don't know. I'm very curious to see how this. And the one thing that worries me about AEW, to be honest, is the four executive vice presidents, is that going to be too many cooks in the kitchen? Is there going to be a problem? You know how that works. Is it going to be WCW again?
Mm-hmm. Well, and hopefully, and I don't believe this will happen, but hopefully they are not Jerry Lawler, always putting themselves over for the title, you know? Right. So, well, let's wrap up a little bit and talk about your project or one of your projects, Rowdy Roddy Piper, the Kilted Avenger. How was it received at StarCast? Did you have some folks give you some feedback about, you know, the project coming up and whatnot?
Yeah, a lot of people were excited for it. Many were unaware of it, and they all loved the concept of it. Roddy Piper he's almost like he's someone. If you, I've heard my friends say this. Like, I don't like wrestling, Dom. I'm like, well, why do you want Spike? Well, it's Roddy Piper, though. It's like, he's on a different level than another wrestler. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, mm-hmm. but it's Piper. So when we do that and I explain that he's a talk show host by day, vigilante by night, they're like, that's perfect. That's perfect. And, you know, like, even we have the word balloon on the cover of the print that we're selling. But like, oh, I could totally hear him saying that. And it's nuts. It's just, I'm really excited about it. And we have some other wrestlers we're talking to that want their own version of a book. And I hope these all come to pass so that I can make the announcement with you again, John. But it was received really well. And I'm lucky to have a very talented artist in Eric Hodson.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, let's talk about some of your other projects too. Donnybrook, your hockey comic is going strong, and you have a second issue in the works, don't you?
Yeah, I have. So I kind of completed the first season. So for those that haven't heard before, I started Donnybrook issue one was a collection of my junior hockey stories. Was it followed the fictional team, the Michigan Massacre, and this is something I did for fun. Hockey comic books, I mean, there's some of them out there. There aren't too many, and none of them really set the world on fire. And people are like, Dom, what are you doing? What are you doing? That's not going to work. If it works, somebody would have done it. Okay. You know, I there a lot of people like whose opinions I trust tell me that. And I'm like, well, worst comes to worst. I feel like I need to do this because this is a lot of fun, and I think it'll work. So I did it. And this is the thing that I'm probably known for the most. And it caught the eye of former Detroit Red Wing Darren McCarty if he wanted to be a part of it. So he not only gave me stories from his career to adapt into future issues, he named one of the teams and is the owner of them, the Burnaby Blazers, the Stone Lumberjacks from Western Canada. So we had that happen. And then after Darren came on board, then we had former Detroit Tiger and Major League Baseball All-Star Brandon Inge come on board, and then Brian O'Halloran, the lead from the movie Clerks 1 and 2, is on board. They also named teams and they're the fictional owners. So as you saw at the event, we have jerseys for all of these teams. And these jerseys are made by a company called Stalls, and Stalls makes the official jerseys for NHL, NFL, and Major League Baseball and Major League Soccer. And these jerseys are incredible. And people come there and they're like, oh, I love hockey. People are buying hockey jerseys because they're fans of hockey or McCarty or O'Halloran, and the whole thing is just taking off. So as this story and this idea has evolved, so has the actual comics. And what I decided to do is with all these teams, on the front of Donnybrook, it says Season 1, Book 1. So there'll be about 4 or 5 books in season one. Mm-hmm. And I have the task of introducing all these teams, which also take on minor characteristics of their owners.
Okay.
So there's a playoff and there's a champion at the end. And like I told Darren McCarty, he won 4 Stanley Cups. I go, well, you have the opportunity of being a 5-time champion. So we're gonna have rings to go to the winning team, and we're gonna have like banner raising ceremonies, and it's just gonna be hilarious. And so at the end of each season, you know, it's like any other story, it's soap opera type thing. Some players go up to the show, some retire, they get hurt, they get traded, they become coaches. All these things can happen to keep, you know, people interested in the story.
All right. So do you have any other new projects coming up as well besides Donnybrook and Roddy Piper, the Kilted Avenger? Any other ones you want to plug real quick?
Yes, I will be starting a Indiegogo very soon for Jake Vetter. Now, Jake Vetter is a pro snowboarder. He's ranked number one in the U.S. He's from Brighton, Michigan, and he is right now, knock on wood, he's a shoe-in for the Olympics. I think he's ranked number 4 in the world, number 1 in the U.S. So we're doing a book on his life so far. He's only 20 years old, but as his life goes, we're going to keep releasing new issues.
Okay, cool.
I think it's a really cool idea. Jake loves it, and I mean, if he makes the Olympics, that's going to be great for indie comics and myself, and that's fucking comics, so look out for that.
Cool. Well, any upcoming appearances? Because if I remember correctly, you have TriCon coming up this weekend, correct?
Correct. Yeah, in West Virginia, right next to the campus of Marshall University. Last year was the first year I went, and we're coming back again this year. The show is a lot of fun. It's one day, which is my absolute favorite. You go in, you set up, you sell books, you close down, and you get out of there. It's absolutely great. I mean, if anybody wanted to buy, they cram it all into a short amount of time, and for a vendor, it's magic.
Nice. So do you have any other cons after that you're going to be at?
Oh, yeah. I'm hoping to be back again in New York Comic Con. We'll see. I have Michigan Comic Con, which is at Cobo Hall in Detroit. There's Wisconsin Comic Con at Milwaukee. And I know I'm leaving a bunch out. Where else am I going to be? Cincinnati Comic Expo, kind of by your neck of the woods.
There you go.
And I've got about 15 more shows, and I don't have in front of me. But MessBucketComics.com will have a complete list.
All right. Where can people find you on social media?
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at MessBucketComic.
There you go. Very, very easy for you all out there. Dom, thanks for coming on, man, and sharing your opinions, your thoughts, your two cents, if you want to call it that, about AEW and about talking about your projects as well. Appreciate you coming on, man.
Thank you. Always a pleasure, John.
You got it. I'm going to throw it to a quick break, folks, and when I return, I will wrap up the episode. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. A discussion about AEW, All In, Double or Nothing, and of course, StarCast 2. I want to thank Justin, my buddy, for stopping by to give me his insights. I want to thank, of course, Dom Riggio from Mess Bucket Comics for helping out as well and giving me his perspective from kind of more of a business standpoint, so to speak. And, you know, there is one other thing that I would like to discuss. I would like to talk about my personal highlights of the weekend, but I'm going to be honest, we're going so long that I think I'll hold on to that until next time. And but if you want to know in advance, there's a couple ways you can do that. You can just contact me via email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com, or you could find me on Twitter @pvdmvp, or you can leave me a message over on the Facebook page, facebook.com/pvdcast, and I would be happy to tell you what my two highlights were from that weekend. Don't forget that the PVDcast is available a lot of different places, including pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly. But it's also available through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, Google Play, SoundCloud, Pod Paradise, the Echo Network, the Libsyn Podcast Player. Basically, anywhere you get podcasts, all you have to do is search for PVDcast or PVDcast John Orlando, and you're sure to find it. And before I forget, I would like to thank again a great sponsor, that of course being Audible. You could get a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/pvdcast. As you know, Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And for you, the listeners of the PVDcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their service. So once again, to download your free audiobook today, just go to audibletrial.com/pvdcast. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/pvdcast to get a free audiobook. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for listening. I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous and stay independent.